Welcome to the Family Farm Podcast, priority topics for family medicine and community pharmacy. Hi, my name is Tina Lien, and I'm a fourth-year pharmacy student at the University of British Columbia.
And I'm Bill Yulin, I'm a family practice resident at UPC.
Welcome to another atrial fibrillation episode. In this episode, we'll focus on the medications involved in rhythm control, and those are amiodarone, sotalol, dronedarone, propafenone, and flecainide. So before discussing about the details of each rhythm control medications, let's first talk about the action of class 1 and class 3 rhythm control medications. According to the CCS guideline, class 1 drugs such as flecainide and propafenone block sodium channels, which results in a slowed atrial conduction, lengthens atrial refractoriness, and suppresses the automaticity. Overall, this class of medication prevents the persistence of atrial fibrillation. As for class 3 drugs, and this includes sotalol, it blocks potassium channels and prolongs the action potential duration. With this prolongation, class 3 drugs prevent atrial fibrillation recurrence. Amiodarone and dronedarone, they have multiple effects and have both class 1 and 3 mechanism of action, which will later be discussed. So the first rhythm control drug I'll be discussing is amiodarone, and this is a class 3 antiarrhythmic agent. So amiodarone is reserved for exceptional cases when other means are not feasible due to long-term toxicity. Its mechanisms includes blocking the sodium channels at rapid pacing frequencies, and this is mainly of the action of class 1 drugs. However, its main effect after prolonged administration is that it acts as a class 3 agent where it blocks potassium channels and prolonged refractoriness. Additionally, amiodarone has vasodilatory action that can decrease cardiac workload and consequently the myocardial oxygen consumption. As for its recommended dosing, it is suggested to be given 200 to 400 milligrams per day, either as a single daily dose or in patients with severe GI symptoms, should divide dose into a twice-a-day dosing. Also, it is best to take the medication with food. It is also recommended that when starting amiodarone, a loading dose should first be given, and that dosing should be 800 to 1,600 milligrams per day for 1 to 3 weeks, then 600 to 800 milligrams per day for 1 month, and then they can go to the maintenance dose, that is 200 to 400 milligrams daily as mentioned before. A maintenance dose of 100 milligrams daily is commonly used especially for the elderly or for patients with low body mass index. However, this dosing is not highly supported by clinical trials. As for its contraindications, patients with iodine allergy, ventricular fibrillation, should not be using amiodarone. Amiodarone should be used cautiously in patients with acute MI, AV block, chronic constrictive pericarditis, decreased heart rate, and for patients with thyroid dysfunction. As for its side effects, the common side effects of amiodarone include bradycardia, hypotension, blue skin, photodermatitis, photosensitivity, loss of appetite, constipation, nausea and vomiting, dizziness, visual disturbances, fatigue, tremor, and insomnia. As for its drug interactions, amiodarone can interact with inducers or inhibitors of CYP3A4, 1A2, 2C9, 2D6, or 2C8. And because we mentioned 3A4, the classic grapefruit juice also will interact with amiodarone. Amiodarone can also increase the warfarin level, causing an INR increase by less than or equals to 50%. When used with digoxin, the level of digoxin can also be increased by less than or equals to 50%. Amiodarone can also increase the serum concentration of lovastatin and simvastatin, and an increase in QT interval can result if used with antidepressants, TCAs, macrolides, and azole antifungals. As the drugs that are either inducers or inhibitors of different CYP enzymes seems to be very important when talking about the interactions with amiodarone, there is a comprehensive drug interaction table that I would like to share with everyone, and this is posted under the Indiana University Drug Interaction Table. So we will post a link on our show notes of this comprehensive table. As for the monitoring points, it is suggested that ALT and AST should be monitored at baseline and every 6 to 12 months. As for chest x-ray, it should also be monitored at baseline and every 6 to 12 months. ECG and eye exam should also be monitored regularly, and TSH, free T4, should also be monitored every 6 months. And now to the next medication, dronedarone, and this is a class 3 antiarrhythmic. It may be added for additional rate control, despite beta blockers or calcium channel blockers or digoxin. However, it is less efficacious than amiodarone with less serious side effects. For its mechanism of action, dronedarone is structurally related to amiodarone and has similar electrophysiological properties. Unlike amiodarone, there's no iodine in the molecule. Dronedarone inhibits sodium and potassium channels, which results in prolongation of the action potential and refractory period in myocardial tissue. Dronedarone also decreases AV conduction and sinus node function by inhibiting calcium channels and beta blocker receptor activity. Its recommended dosing is 400 mg twice a day with food to ensure the extent of absorption. As for its contraindications, patients with permanent atrial fibrillation of any duration in which sinus rhythm cannot be restored and attempts to restore it are no longer considered possible should not be using dronedarone. Other contraindications include second or third degree AV block or sick sinus syndrome. However, an exception is patients with a functioning pacemaker. Patients with bradycardia, and that's less than 50 beats per minute, should also not be using dronedarone. Other contraindications are patients with liver or lung toxicity related to the previous use of amiodarone, severe hepatic impairment, unstable hemodynamic conditions, QT interval of 500 milliseconds or greater, or a PR interval exceeding 280 milliseconds. And lastly, patients with an NYHA class 4 heart failure or NYHA class 2 or 3 heart failure with a recent decompensation requiring hospitalization or referral to a specialized heart failure clinic. As for its side effects, the common side effects include asthenia, diarrhea, nausea, abdominal pain, increased serum creatinine greater than or equals to 10% 5 days after treatment started, and a prolonged QTC interval. Severe side effects include heart failure and liver failure. As for its drug interactions, dronedarone concentration can be increased if used with CYP3A4 inhibitors. The strong inhibitors like ketoconazole, itraconazole, voriconazole, clarithromycin, cyclosporine, or grapefruit juice should not be used together with dronedarone. When used together with a CYP3A4 inducers, and those are carbamazepine, phenobarbital, phenytoin, rifampin, or St. John's wort, the concentration of dronedarone can be decreased. When dronedarone is used together with class 1 or 3 antiarrhythmics, phenothiazine, TCAs, there may be a prolonged QT interval. When used together with beta blockers or non-dihydropyridine calcium channel blockers, there may be an increase in bradycardia. As for its monitoring points, ECG should be monitored every 3 months when the patient is on dronedarone. Serum creatinine should also be monitored at baseline and 7 days after initiation of the therapy. And lastly, AST and ALT should be monitored at baseline and every 3 to 6 months, then periodically after. And now to the next medication, Sotlo. Sotlo prevents recurrent atrial fibrillation as effectively as quinidine-verapamil combination, but it is less effective than amiodarone. As for its mechanism of action, Please refer back to the beta blocker mechanism of action mentioned previously. However, for salt law specifically, it contains both beta-1 and beta-2 adrenal receptor blocking activity and the cardiac action potential and cardiac action potential duration prolongation, and that's a class 2 and class 3 effect. As for its recommended dosing, salt law should be given 80 milligrams twice a day. If the frequency of relapse does not reduce and excessive QT prolongation does not occur within 3 days, the dose can be increased to 120 milligrams twice a day. If the response is still inadequate and QT prolongation is not excessive, the dose can be further increased to 160 milligrams twice a day. However, as for patients with a renal dysfunction, the dose should be adjusted according to their creatinine clearance. If their creatinine clearance is greater than 60 mL per minute, then a dose should be administered every 12 hours. If it's between 40 to 60 mL per minute, the dose should be administered every 24 hours. And if the creatinine clearance is less than 40 mL per minute, the use of salt law is contraindicated. Other contraindications of using salt law include severe bradycardia, severe hypotension, cardiogenic shock, decompensated heart failure, right ventricular failure due to pulmonary hypertension, second or third degree AV block, sixth sinus syndrome or sinoatrial block, severe peripheral arterial circulatory disorders, anesthesia with drugs that produce myocardial depression, pheochromocytoma that is not treated with alpha-adrenergic blocking drugs, and QT interval greater than 450 milliseconds. As for its side effects, salt law can cause headache, fatigue, sleep disturbances, nausea, hypotension, bradycardia, torsades de pointes, decrease in heart rate, dizziness, and weakness. And as for its cautionary notes, it is the same as for all beta blockers. The sudden discontinuation of beta blockers is discouraged due to a potential fatal cardiac events. Thus, when you want to withdraw the therapy, you can gradually withdraw the medication over a period of 1 to 2 weeks. And for the monitoring points, ECG, heart rate, creatinine clearance, potassium, magnesium levels, and QTC interval should all be monitored throughout the therapy. And now to our next medication, propafenone. And this is a class 1 antiarrhythmic agent. It is often combined with AV nodal blocking agent and has a 30 to 50% efficacy at 1 year. As for its mechanism of action, propafenone is a class 1C antiarrhythmic agent with local anesthetic and membrane stabilizing properties. It prolongs PR and QRS intervals in a dose-dependent manner. It also prolongs effective refractory period and reduces spontaneous automaticity. Propafenone is a weak inhibitor of beta-adrenergic receptors and weakly inhibits calcium influx. Propafenone also prolongs atrial ventricular conduction. As for its recommended dosing, for the immediate release formulation, an initial dose of 150 milligrams per day should be given. The usual dosing is 150 milligrams every 8 hours. This dosage increase can be made at a minimum of 3 to 4 day interval, and the maximum is 600 milligrams per day. As for its contraindications, patients with a severe or uncontrolled heart failure, cardiogenic shock, sinoatrial, atrioventricular, and intraventricular disorders of impulse conduction and sinus node dysfunction in the absence of an artificial pacemaker, severe bradycardia, marked hypotension, bronchospastic disorders, severe disorders of electrolyte balance, and severe hepatic failure should not be using propafenone. The common side effects of propafenone includes chest pain, edema, palpitations, altered taste, constipation, nausea and vomiting, dizziness, anxiety, dyspnea, fatigue, and headache. As for its serious side effects, it includes angina, decreased in heart rate, heart failure, AV block, hypotension, sinus arrest, torsades de pointes, ventricular arrhythmia, agranulocytosis, and SLE. For the drug interactions, the inducers and inhibitors of CYP1A2, 2D6, and 3A4 can affect propafenone levels in the body. There can be an increase in proarrhythmic effect if used together with amiodarone. Propafenone can also increase the concentration of theophylline, venlafaxine, and warfarin. If used together with SSRIs, grapefruit juice, and St. John's wort, the concentration of propafenone can be increased. As for some monitoring points, ECG, heart rate, and CBC should be monitored continuously throughout the treatment. LFTs should also be monitored at baseline and if the patient is symptomatic for hepatotoxicity. And to our last medication, Fleeknide, it is not as commonly dispensed in a community pharmacy as the previously mentioned medications. However, it is used for the treatment of atrial fibrillation and often in combination with beta blockers, digoxin, or non-dihydropyridine calcium channel blockers. Its mechanism of action is similar to that of propafenone and is also a class 1 antiarrhythmic agent, where it slows the conduction in cardiac tissue by altering the transport of ions across the cell's membranes, causing a slight prolongation of refractory periods and decreases the rate of rise of action potential, without affecting the duration of action. The recommended dosing is 50 to 150 milligrams twice a day, and this dose can be increased by 50 milligrams twice daily at 4-day intervals. The maximum dose per day is 300 milligrams per day. As for its contraindications, patients with a second or third degree AV block, cardiogenic shock, should not be using this medication. Fleeknide should also be used with caution for patients with CAD or LV dysfunction. Common side effects of Fleeknide include nausea, asthenia, tremor, dizziness, headache, blurred vision, corneal deposits, dry eyes, nervousness, dyspnea, and fatigue. Serious side effects include cardiac arrest, chest pain, ECG abnormality, heart block, heart failure, tachyventricular arrhythmia, hepatotoxicity, and even death. In fact, there is a boxed warning regarding its proarrhythmic side effect, and it suggested that patients on this medication should monitor for QTC prolongation, and patients with a chronic atrial fibrillation should not use the medication. As for its drug interactions, Fleeknide can increase digoxin's level. It can also increase the negative inotropic effect if used with beta blockers. And if used with carbamazepine, phenobarbital, or phenytoin, it can decrease Fleeknide levels. On the other hand, if used with cimetidine, Fleeknide level can be increased. There's also a major interaction with medications acting either as an inducer or inhibitor of CYP2D6. And lastly, if Fleeknide is used with any QTC prolonging agents, there can be a significant interaction where the patient will be more prone to the QTC prolonging side effect. As for some monitoring points, Fleeknide trough levels should also be monitored if the dose used is greater than 200 milligrams per day, if the patient has a renal or hepatic impairment, or if the patient is a child, has heart failure, or is an elderly. The usual trough level for Fleeknide is around 0.2 to 1 micrograms per mil, and toxicity usually happens greater than or equals to 1 micrograms per mil. ECG should also be monitored throughout the therapy.
Thank you, Tina. So just as a quick summary, the rate control of medications can include beta blockers, non-dihydropyridine calcium channel blockers, or digoxin. And for rhythm control, you can choose class 1 or class 3 antiarrhythmics, and class 1 includes Fleeknide, propafenone, and class 3 includes amiodarone, dronedarone, or sotalol. And the choice between rate and rhythm control is decided by the patient's characteristics and their preferences, and there is no significant difference between these two strategies in terms of controlling mortality or morbidity.
Thank you for the summary, Billy. And that concludes this episode. As for all the information used in this episode, they are from the CCS 2012 guideline, ECPS, therapeutic choices, Lexicomp, and RX files. As for our next episode, we'll go over in-depth information about different anticoagulants. So stay tuned for more excitement to come.
Until then, thank you for listening.
And we'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Family Farm Podcast. Please leave your feedback and check out our show notes at fppodcast.org.